Chapter 12, Peer Pressure. 11-year-old Connor seemed different this year. His usual enthusiasm about school had always occupied dinner conversation. But fifth grade in the middle school, although new and exciting in September, even into October, had seemed to intimidate him into quietness of late. Connor's teasing and put-downs of his six-year-old sister Chloe had intensified beyond their normal love-hate relationship. School mornings were iffy as to whether or not Connor would be complaining of a stomach ache. For the first time, Nancy didn't know how to manage her normally pleasant son. How is the behavior intended for success? Connor had always been cheerful, fun-loving, and enthusiastic. Now he moped and spent more time in his room. He rarely shared his feelings openly, so questions about what was going on got nothing in reply. He did well in school and in sports. He had several good friends, some of whom he had known all through school. Wilson was his best friend. But Nancy hadn't seen him around lately. None of his friends, actually. She hadn't thought anything of it until Connor's behavior changed. Connor had always been sensitive to disappointing his parents or doing anything to cause them more worry. His father, Paul, had been sick throughout Connor's early childhood, and then his parents divorced when he was 7. Connor never wanted to make further waves. He did his best to be a good boy and keep out of trouble. His silence was intended to keep his problems to himself and his parents free of worry, but his treatment of Chloe and isolating himself were his giveaways. What is the behavior signaling? Nancy learned from Connor's doctor that stomach aches often signaled stress, but that there was nothing physically wrong. A few more notes than usual were coming home from Mrs. Tilton. His work was showing minor decline and some homework assignments were missing, but nothing serious. Paul hadn't noticed anything different and thought Nancy was overreacting. The more Nancy nagged her son and asked what was wrong, the quieter he became. Her worry made any reassurances sound phony, and she sermonized about spending more time on homework and getting more organized. Mostly he didn't respond, but once exploded with, "Stop talking about it! Leave me alone! I'm fine, okay?" He didn't know how to ask for what he didn't know he needed. He just felt mad, and his behavior was disturbing. Nancy had to find out why. Is acceptance unconditional? Connor had always been sensitive. Firm words felt like rough sandpaper, as did seams in socks and new clothes. Too much stimulation easily overwhelmed him. Trips to the supermarket often provoked tantrums and leaving without groceries. As he got older, his sensitivity mellowed, but now he seemed more sensitive than ever, and Nancy quickly fell back into old patterns. She had always walked on eggshells around his sensitive nature with apologies and reassurances whenever he seemed offended, but now she wondered if she hadn't hardened him up enough. Had her carefulness given him permission to climb into a shell when things weren't going right? He seemed too young to be hitting adolescent withdrawal. She didn't know where to let go and where to intervene. Paul was no help. He always thought she overreacted. Are expectations set for success or failure? Because Connor had always been an adaptable, cooperative child, Nancy and Paul held high expectations of him. Connor rarely argued about what he was asked to do. He did chores like a trooper and included Chloe in his play whenever his mother insisted. He usually rose to any occasion as long as he didn't feel yelled at. Paul and Nancy had no idea that he was so sensitive to their problems, which they tried to keep from their children. It was clear to them that Connor was amenable and capable. So when Paul decided to give Connor a computer for his 11th birthday, he knew he could set some parameters around it by letting his son know that with the computer privilege came monitoring of his emails. Connor agreed. But when problems first arose for him, he felt alone. He feared his mother would freak out if he told her what was happening. It seemed far safer to keep things to himself. After all, he knew how capable he was at helping others, so why wouldn't he be able to help himself? He didn't realize that his problems were leaking into his behavior. Is connection being made? Nancy learned in her parenting class how much a boy like Connor needed a neutral sounding board in order to open up. Questions, especially lately, made him clam up. She had to put her worry aside and respond neutrally so Connor would trust her enough to open up. With encouragement and support from her class, she stopped asking him questions about what was wrong and structured homework time and studying as if nothing had changed. She tried the no-blame solution, see Chapter 11, for sibling fights, but Nancy could tell the root was still there. Sometimes, when stomach aches were bad, he stayed home, and sometimes she insisted he go. Finally, it seemed time to try her new connective communication skills. The next time she was driving him to an away basketball game, she gave it a go. "You know, Connor, I've noticed that you've been spending a lot of time alone in your room. I'm just a bit confused by that, since I don't know whether that means you just want more privacy or you're angry with me or Chloe." Privacy. Nancy didn't know where to go now and was sorry she'd given him the privacy out. She tried again in a few minutes. "You also seem sadder to me than you used to." Connor looked out the window. Nancy waited a few minutes and then changed the subject. "What's Wilson been up to these days?" "How should I know?" Connor's angry tone of dismissal was the clue Nancy needed. She chose her words and her tone carefully so as not to react with her usual worry. "Oh, sounds like you had a falling out." "He's a jerk." Nancy bit her tongue to keep from saying, "You shouldn't call your friends a jerk." "So, I guess he's not your best friend anymore." "I don't know. I don't want to talk about it." Nancy dropped it. But she had learned a major clue. She called Paul that night after Connor was in bed. Paul said he hadn't monitored Connor's incoming emails for a couple of months and would do so. The next night he told Nancy what he had learned. A boy named Artie had been emailing Connor hate notes. Paul read some to Nancy. "You know, everyone at school says you're a faggot. Your mother's screwing the gym teacher. You're an effing loser. Nobody likes you. You're going down." What now? Horrified, they decided that Paul would confront Connor that weekend when he had the kids. Nancy would take Chloe Saturday afternoon. She desperately wanted to call the school, but Paul convinced her that could make things worse for Connor. She had to be patient. What qualities need focus in order to grow? Connor needed to know that letting his parents in was more important than worrying them. Paul knew that Connor's silence about the emails meant that he didn't know how to tell them, not that he was being sneaky and deceitful. He would need to focus on his son's consideration of them rather than his anger at not being told. Before he launched into the emails, he decided to share a story with Connor of a time he had been bullied in fourth grade by a new kid in school. Connor seemed very interested but offered nothing. Then Paul said, "Connor, I checked your emails a couple of nights ago." Connor's face froze. "Do you remember we had a deal about that when I gave the computer to you?" Connor nodded his head, then dropped it to his chest. "I think I know how hard it must be for you to talk to us because you don't want us to worry, and you probably figure that you can handle this yourself. You're a very capable, strong kid." Connor raised his head. "Who is this Artie?" his father continued. The story came out. Artie, a new boy at school, was trying to gather friends wherever he could and had targeted the very popular Wilson as one of them. Artie knew that Wilson and Connor were best friends and had begun his campaign to turn Wilson against Connor. He had bought Wilson with some prized baseball cards and an invitation to a ball game with him and his dad and two other friends of Connor's. Since then, Wilson had seemed friendly enough but never suggested getting together after school. Connor noticed him hanging out with Artie during recess. Paul conjectured that part of Artie's efforts was to silence Connor by humiliating him. Connor began to cry. How can the problem be solved without punishment? In discussing how to handle the situation, Paul and Nancy knew that if they had reprimanded Connor for not telling him about the emails, they could have pushed him further into isolation. He would have felt accused and misunderstood. They would have to be careful not to react and tell him what to do, but to support him in doing what he thought best. Supporting him was their job. Carrying it out was his. Once everything was out in the open, Nancy continued her connective communication with Connor by acknowledging the pain he must be in and the tension he must feel from having kept it in so long. The more upset her tone, the less he connected. She needed to be a sounding board and a good listener once she empathized and validated Connor's feelings. As much as she was tempted to tell him what to do and say to this Artie, who brought out her killer instinct, and as much as she wanted to call this boy and run the riot act to his mother, Nancy knew that she would only infuriate her son. He had gone this long in silence, which told her he wasn't asking for help. Even though she knew he needed it, she wanted him to do the problem-solving. "So, Connor, if you could say anything you wanted to Artie, what might it be?" she ventured. "Lay off and find your own friends." It seemed that Connor cared more about losing Wilson than Artie's harassment. "And what do you wish you could say to Wilson?" "I don't know. If he doesn't want to be friends, I guess that's his decision." "Oh, so you're willing to let him go that easily?" Nancy challenged. "I would have thought he meant more to you." Connor let down. "He does, but I don't know what to do about it." He started to tear up. Nancy asked if she could make a suggestion, as he seemed truly stuck. He said yes. "What if you told him about the emails you'd been getting? What do you think he would say?" "He probably wouldn't believe me." "But what if he did? How will you know if you don't try?" Connor said he'd think about it. Nancy said that she would help in any way. Later that day, Nancy suggested, "What if you made copies of them and put them in an envelope with a letter to Wilson? He'd have to believe you then." Connor did make copies, but found his own way to present them to Wilson. Once he had his parents' support, but not their worry that he was some kind of a victim, he found the courage. Wilson was soon hanging around the kitchen. "Are strong boundaries keeping good balance?" Nancy had to let go of her own agenda, her conviction that she had to handle it. She had to be willing to let him find his own way. When she asked about talking to his teacher, he said an emphatic no. Nancy had learned about the difference between her problem and her child's. As distraught as she was, she knew that this was Connor's problem. It didn't mean that she had to leave him to fend for himself. It meant that she had to help him find his way through it without imposing her way to try to fix it. Once his mother and father's support enabled him to act, they could highlight his courage and resilience. Connor emerged stronger than before.